Welcome to the Side Hustles and Self Podcast, episode 50. My name is Yuri, and I'm joined by Keishi.
Hey, Yuri. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. I got my Calpis soda with me. What do you got?
I've got 100% straight apple juice from made out of apples from Aomori Prefecture in north of Japan, which is famous for its apples. It's really good. And I've got tea cane, pear and fig fruit tea that my family sent me from Slovakia.
Kirin?
Tea cane.
Okay. What I heard Kieran for a second from Slovakia. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
They're out there.
So I got a couple boxes. It's really good too.
How does it taste? Well, what about the other one?
Yeah, the apple juice is really good. It's did you have it on this podcast before maybe? It's
I
one of those
like
juices. It's not transparent, but it's like really thick and really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And the fruit is really good. Both my girlfriend and I like to drink these fruit flavored teas. We always get a lot when we go to Slovakia. I feel like there's a wider variety there, and it's also much cheaper than buying them here at Caldi or one of those supermarkets.
Yeah.
So we always just bring like a couple dozen boxes. But a
couple thousand boxes?
A couple dozen.
Okay.
I'm not doing illegal import of teas. but yeah, it's good. I feel like these fruit flavored teas are a really nice hot drink to have, especially for somebody like me that doesn't drink coffee.
Yeah.
And I guess you don't drink coffee either.
No, not as much. I don't drink coffee. Coffee has been I don't know. I no longer feel excited about coffee. I no longer feel productive with coffee. It's all about carbonated drinks now.
Oh, so you went to the other dark side.
Yeah. Well, I mean, carbonated drinks. I mean, the thing is, coffee is like there are plenty of benefits to coffee and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I feel like in a way it's also a bit of a net negative overall because. You know, let's say you're working or you're doing your stuff and you have a drink on hand just to, you know, keep drinking, keep yourself hydrated.
Yeah.
Coffee doesn't exactly make you hydrated. If anything, it's the complete opposite. So you can sip on, it's like sipping, you know, you're drinking it because you're doing the action of drinking. You think you're staying hydrated, which is like the complete opposite. So it's like, well, you know, it's not good for you in that sense. And then obviously if you're skipping breakfast, it's going to up your anxiety. And mess with your stomach a little bit, it's gonna make you shit.
Yeah.
At least in my case, I know some people like have literally no impact. Coffee has no effect on them. They can drink at 8 o'clock at night and go to sleep, no problem. Whereas in my case, it's not the case. I'm pretty sensitive to it. So like, yeah. Today, like I told you, I have Calpis soda. It's a Aoringo.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like all Calpis. It's like it's all white, but it tastes pretty good.
It's good. So because here's the funny thing, I bought two drinks today.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to go with this juice, which I picked second. But actually, I also had this, which I'll bring next week.
What did you have? Oh, okay.
Which is a non-carbonated version of Calpis with apple.
You're very close next time. It's funny, like sometimes we come very close of like having the same exact drink. I think one time we had like the same exact drink.
Yeah, I wonder if it's because we always try to pick the seasonal stuff or the new stuff.
Yeah.
And then I think Japan's pretty rigid about like what thing is seasonal at what time. And I wonder if there's like the overlap that we always...
We always see the same things.
Yeah. It's like maybe now it's the apple season, apple drink season.
Although I think in the case of Natural Lawson, they have their own like stock of things. Whereas like Lawson, the general one, 7-Eleven, Family Mart, they probably have like similar lines. And Natural Lawson has like a bit more high-end stuff. So I don't know unless you go to Natural Lawson, you might not see some of the stuff that I buy. But this one I bought in Lawson today.
In regular Lawson?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw, I was sending you a photo the other day, but I saw this really nice Japanese looking plastic bottle with like a, what it called, embossed or with like a 3D kind of Japanese theme on it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was just a regular green tea, so I decided not to get it.
Disappointing.
But the bottle is really nice.
Yeah.
Although again, it's a plastic bottle and I guess we should reduce the use of plastic bottles as much as possible.
Yeah. I have like a collection of bottles and like cans that my building does recycling. I think all Japanese buildings do recycling or like you're supposed to do it where you separate the bottles from everything else from the burnables. So I have a nice collection of things waiting for me to toss out at the end of the week. But yeah.
All right. So what are we talking about today?
I don't think we have a topic planned. So then we're just going to go off the top and we're going to talk about NFTs, YouTube. You started a YouTube channel recently. We're going to talk about books and how you approach reading books and how I approach reading books. What else?
Yeah, we, I guess we can look back and talk about some of the goals that we set in April and yeah. and how we're progressing. Although we'll do a full episode on that later on,
probably in 2 weeks' time.
So yeah, and whatever else comes up.
All right, sounds good. Let's jump in right now. How about your goals? Where are you with your goals right now? I don't think you set as big goals as I did. I wonder.
Let me see, because I don't even remember what my goals were, to be honest.
Because mine is like 8 articles for Big Site, 4 articles for the new one. I'm on 1 out of 7 and 1 out of 4.
Yeah, finish or get close to finishing ongoing client project successfully. That's going pretty well. Move new site along, finish keyword research and make some briefs. So I made some different. So I took some different direction there, and I actually went out and hired 5 writers for a sample article. Mm-hmm. I got those in, so I got a reply to them. And the rest are still haven't been touched, other than the regular publishing, which I'm it's humming along, I guess. Okay. But yeah, I was again. I've been pretty busy with client work recently, so the website stuff's been kind of on a sidetrack.
Yeah.
But still managing to publish regularly. So.
Okay. All right. Then I figure I've set the bigger goals here. Actually, 2 out of 4 for the new site. I'm up 2 out of 4.
Nice. I still have a week.
Yeah. So I guess this next week I'm gonna work hard towards meeting the 8 out of 8 goal. One article in so far over there. I've stuff that's due like on the 29th and the 31st that I'll have to do like a last day rush to get them out. 31st is a Monday. So I guess we'll do a goal recap on like May 5th or 6th.
Yeah. How's your process usually after you get the articles? Do you just edit them in the Google Docs or whatever they send it in and then just slap it into WordPress and publish it? Or?
Yeah. I just run it through like Grammarly just to like spot check for any typos. I will read through them because I don't know. I like to have a certain style. Like, I don't know. Well, sometimes this is like half and half nowadays. Sometimes I just let it be just to get work out there faster. Yeah. But I also notice like it's just bad for user experience if your stuff is written in really complex, long sentences. So I guess first step is like run it through Grammarly and also insert some like secondary keywords and like long tail keywords that I would also like to rank for in that article.
Yeah.
If it's the language stuff, like add pictures. If it's not, I'll work on pictures later. But like, yeah, after I do that check, I pop it into WordPress, format it, add pictures and publish. I think that's pretty much it. And then like I'll read through after publishing it. Like it's not like anyone, you know, rushes to my site to read, oh, this is the good stuff. So after I publish it, I'll come back maybe like the next day or do it like hours later. I'll read through it and be like, what can be simplified? Where can I add like something that helps out a person that's scanning for information?
Yeah.
So like bullet points, summaries, quick takeaways. I'll do that.
Yeah. Have you thought about hiring somebody to do the images for you? Those seem pretty outsourceable, I guess, right? It's mostly... What is it? It's like a text on top of photo.
Yeah. Typically. That's the thing. It's like, it's one of these things where you feel like it's small enough that you can knock out by yourself. But it's, I guess it could be one of these things that adds up. I think I should probably outsource that at some point. Cause it's like, I just copy the language stuff. I just copy out the phrases.
Yeah.
Slap it on to a picture and press download. And this process itself like takes a second or less. So I could get it done quite quickly with some like minor formatting.
Yeah.
That's why, because like the process is quite quick, I haven't really thought about outsourcing it. But the annoying part is like then uploading it and then, you know, sticking it in like where they belong and adding the alt tags and everything.
Yeah, that sounds like a perfect thing for kind of systemizing. Because I was just thinking about about systems and stuff like that the other day. Because you know, I'm using Notion for like I guess managing writers and articles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And recently, they after like a year or a year and a half or whatever of promising, they've created an API. So now you can like code your own things and make your own automations and stuff like that.
Okay.
And like I'm a part of like a couple of different Facebook groups on the tool.
Okay.
Like the tool users, and I think I'm subscribed to, or at least some videos pop up on my YouTube feed based on what I've watched in the past, I guess, related to this. And it always makes me wonder, like when I see these things, it's like, where is the balance between just getting things done and just kind of doing things and like systemizing everything just too much?
Because
sometimes I see these people and they're trying to like build every single system in their Notion, right? They're trying to do everything from, I don't know, everything from managing their writers all the way to tracking how their flowers grow and how many times a day they go to the toilet, perhaps even in their Notion. I'm like, where's the balance between just getting things done and between systemizing?
Is there, you know, like I obviously I've used Notion thanks to you, but like And let me step back. And I've seen people smarter than me really incorporate Notion or all those other like knowledge bank or brain extension type software or knowledge organization type software.
Yeah.
I wish, is there like a YouTube video that is newbie friendly, just introduces to like how people use Notion in the most basic way and how they implement it? Because obviously, yeah, you write stuff down, right? And then you could use it as a checklist and whatever. It probably could, you know, whatever you put in your notebook probably can be like done with Notion, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, because a lot of stuff I watch on YouTube is actually around the topic of productivity and like personal knowledge management and stuff like that. Or at least I used to watch a lot of it. Nowadays, I just have a system and just follow it and don't worry about it too much, because that becomes unproductive, right? Learning about productivity at some point just by its nature becomes unproductive.
Yeah, because you're no longer being productive.
Exactly. You just got to get the stuff done, unless you're a productivity YouTuber, which most of these people that you're watching are.
Yeah.
And that's their job. But for you, it shouldn't be your job to keep your productivity system perfectly organized. Just like you don't necessarily have to have the cleanest desk in the world and still get a job done.
Yeah. And you don't have to learn, like going back to that learning how to learn course, you don't have to learn every single tactic out there. You can grab like one or two of the basics and just run with that.
Exactly. Just pick what works and just run with it, right? Like don't try to choose the right tool. Just get the job done. Like,
yeah.
Should I eat this rice with chopsticks or with knife and forks? Whichever suits you better. But don't spend your entire lunchtime figuring out which you should choose. Yeah. And by the time you get to the actual eating, it's time to go back to work. So I think it's that kind of thing. And I think a lot of people are actually trapped in this nowadays because there's just so much content out there.
They're trapped in this because they feel good from like learning and acquiring this like new tips and tricks. You feel good because, oh, this is interesting. Oh, I'm learning this. But yeah, implementation is the hard part.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. And I think part of it is just, it's like kicking the goalpost further and further, right? It's like the goalpost being that this is when I'm actually going to start my project. And you just kick it. Oh, maybe if I implement this tool, I'll be able to do it better. Maybe if I implement this tool, I'll be able to do it better. It's like, maybe if I use Notion instead of Evernote or Roam Research instead of Notion, I'll become a better person.
Yeah.
It's not exactly how it works. but back to your question, I think there's two types of videos, and this kind of ties back to the fact that you kind of keep chasing the next shiny thing. Mm-hmm. If you get stuck in this productivity space too long, it almost becomes like a drag race.
Yeah.
I think there's two kinds of videos, and one is like almost like tutorials and walkthroughs. Mm-hmm. So people show you how they're using a tool, or they show you how to use a certain tool for a certain thing. And I think those are good. But then I think before that, there's videos that talk about the principles behind how to use these tools, right?
Yeah, I think that's the most important one.
And this is the most important part. Like I think Tiago Forte is the guy that has this thing called PARA, which is like projects, areas, resources, and archives. And it's like a how you should organize your files in life kind of system that I'm using with some modifications. So it's like I feel like that was the best part for me to learn, because those principles apply regardless of the tool that I choose to use. Those principles apply, right? It's like when you're a salesperson, for example, you shouldn't focus on how to use Zoom or how to use Skype or how to use
email
or how to do in-person meetings. You should focus on how to actually close deals and convince your customers, right? And those basic principles translate whether you're communicating via email, whether you're communicating via phone or Skype, Zoom, Line, WhatsApp, whatever the million other things out there are.
Yeah.
So I think when it comes to stuff like this, like whether it's systemizing your kind of personal life and knowledge and whatever, or your work, or your side hustle and anything related to that, I think you got to start at the level of the principles rather than the level of the which tool do I go with.
It's the trunk-based knowledge approach that I talked about from the course that I took, where you focus on the roots rather than leaves and the trees. You start with the foundation first.
Yeah, exactly. And when you start with the foundation, the tool that you choose to use or should choose to use should be the one that you're comfortable using, right?
Yeah.
You shouldn't use Evernote just because Yuri uses Evernote, or you shouldn't use Rome just because Ali Abdali uses Rome or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I think it's just a matter of, at least on my side, it's just a matter of experimentation. So you try a bunch of different apps, and some will stick, some won't, right?
Yeah.
But again, it's like don't overthink it. And I think another thing that's kind of booming right now is templates for these types of apps, right?
Okay.
Templates for Notion for, again, for everything from managing your writers all the way to tracking how many times a day you poop.
Do people track that?
I don't know. I assume some do. So I think these templates are good, but at the same time, again, if you're choosing an app like Notion, I feel like the reason you should be choosing it is because you can build whatever suits you the best, right? Mm-hmm. In which case, if you use the template the way it's provided to you, I think the chances that it perfectly suits you is small. So I think maybe you can modify it, or maybe you can build something from the ground up.
Yeah.
And if you're just sticking to rigid framework that somebody else provides to you, then I feel like there's always a better app for this, right? Like if you want to track your tasks, then maybe rather than trying to build a task manager in Notion, just get Things or just get OmniFocus, I think, is one of the such apps. Or just use the default app in your iPhone.
The Notes?
Yeah, I think there's Notes, and I think there's also Tasks.
Oh, yeah. Reminders.
Yeah, Reminders or whatever it is. So I feel like, and again, I've been guilty of this for quite a long time, I think, because I enjoy watching these videos and
it's the worst.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think you can learn a lot from them, but if you just try to follow them to the every single last minute detail that they present, I think it actually becomes counterproductive, because like my situation is different than Ali Abdaal's situation. Mm. Other than the fact that he has millions of dollars, even on like the operational level, right? And everybody's situation is different. And if you try to just copy somebody rather than kind of adapt and modify, I don't think you're gonna come up with something that works for you well, at least most of the times.
Yeah. All right. So I guess I'll look for the videos that talk about principles of like how to use Notion or why they're using it and how they're using it to improve their overall productivity, rather than just like, hey, use this trick and do that trick and use these checkboxes and then do interlinking, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, I think like if we go back to the example that you were saying of these images for a blog post.
Yeah.
Like if you're only posting, what, like 10 or 12 blog posts a month, I think, at most in your case, right?
Yeah, I do, at most like 6 a month.
So anyways, it's not like in the tens or whatever, and it's not like you're working with a dozen different writers on like a continuous basis or whatever.
Yeah.
In that case, it's like, all right, if the job is to outsource just the images part of work, then really all you need to do is like either send your potential assistant a list of the articles he or she needs to work on for the week, or something simple like Trello, where you just make two columns, you make doesn't have images and has images, and then it's the assistant's job to take the posts in the doesn't have images into the has images column, right? And it's like, and I think like there's people that, assuming you were to try to outsource this, I think there's people that before even bothering to find an assistant or whatever, like they would spend a week trying to figure out what the best tool is for managing that assistant for like the 30 minutes of work a week.
Yeah. All right. By the way, you mentioned that you bought 3 books yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I
what did you buy?
Yeah,
so you didn't answer my question earlier, so I have to ask it now.
Apologies for that. Yeah. So continuing with my habit of buying books before I finish reading what I have on my bookshelf, I bought 3. Initially, I had 3 in my hand, which was Grit, the Grit, the Fraying Wires Between Americans and Our Energy Future. Mm-hmm. So this one's about the, I guess as the name suggests, about the American electrical grid and how it needs to change. With more and more renewables coming online and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I've been doing a fair amount of work with a consulting company specializing in energy over the last few months or for more than a year now.
Okay.
I'm just starting to find it to be a more and more fascinating topic. And it's like, it's one of those things that, again, as we talked before, it's like kind of mundane. It's like you plug in your television into the power outlet and it works.
Yeah.
But like when you actually think about how that power gets there, it's a pretty fascinating world, I think. So I decided to buy this. I heard about this before, and I saw it on the bookshelf in our favorite bookstore.
Mount Zen?
Yeah.
I have to go there. I haven't been there in a bit.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So many books, and you realize that you can never consume all the
knowledge. Oh, man, it's a pain. You're like, look at all these books. I want to read them all, but like you realize life's short. Well, life can be long and life can be short depending on how you
get it. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I was kind of thinking again about what we were talking before the other day, like how I kind of started to think about reading books as venture capital or angel investing.
Okay.
It's like rather than wasting my time trying to finish something that I'm just not finding interesting or that I don't feel like I'm learning from or that's not entertaining for me.
Yeah.
why waste the time if there's like a thousand other books out there that, that are waiting to be bought and read?
That's true.
Right. So yeah, it just fascinating. Like my girlfriend started on the first floor, which is Japanese.
Yeah.
Books, and I think the fourth floor is the English books.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, when you're finished, just call me. I'm like, yeah, I could spend the whole day here. So whenever you're finished, just come here.
What did you, okay. So you got the grid.
Yes. Yeah, so back to the topic. I got the grid, which is about energy, which I find interesting. The other one I got is Liftoff by Eric Berger.
Okay.
Elon Musk and the desperate early days that launched SpaceX. So I think you read this too, but I read the Elon Musk biography.
Ashley Vance or something.
Yeah, exactly. So I read that one. I found it pretty fascinating.
I liked it, yeah.
I find some of the stuff that Elon's doing with crypto ridiculous, but that aside, he's a great entrepreneur and he's done some amazing stuff that I think very few people will be able to ever replicate.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like you. I'm really interested in space and I think SpaceX is really a, like it's a company that's changing the game completely.
It's right? An important company, you can say.
Yeah, it's like going back to the. Almost going back to the times when the U.S. was working on the Apollo program or something, right?
And the whole space race with the Soviets, right?
Yeah, exactly. Back then, the motivation was essentially, let's beat the Soviets, so let's get a man in space first. That didn't work out. And it's like, let's have a man orbit the Earth first. I think that didn't work out. But then finally managed to send Alan Shepard and John Glenn and all those Mercury astronauts up there. Everybody got excited. And they're like, okay, let's send the man to the moon first.
Yeah.
And that worked out. And from then, we were pretty much confined to their lower Earth orbit, space shuttle and ISS.
On a tangent, I think China landed their own rover on Mars, which is, I think, good overall, because now it creates another space race. And like, generally, competition is good. It breeds more and more progress, even though it's like U.S. butting heads with China. But
yeah, for overall, I think so.
Sake of humanity, it's like, it's exciting to also have the Chinese land on the moon.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's part of it, right? Because I think America was unchallenged for quite a few, for a couple of decades.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of...
they got comfortable.
You rest on your laurels. Is that a...
It's a thing. Yeah, it's a phrase.
All right. And I think perhaps now with China getting up into space more and stuff like that, the government will get more interested in it on the United States side.
Yeah.
But also I think the fact that Elon was able to bring more of a kind of capitalistic and market-driven aspect to it, I think it's really helpful because I think there's two ways companies can work, right? One is kind of the market-driven company where you innovate and you come up with a new product and the market wants it and the market pays you for it.
Yeah.
And then there's the way where you go after the government contracts because they're very lucrative because they don't care about the price too much. And like once you get it, you're kind of the supplier, right? It's like Boeing and Lockheed in case of aerospace. And it kind of becomes a cost, right? It's like there's no reason for Boeing to try to go to the moon unless or to Mars unless the U.S. government asks them to do so.
Pays them a lot of money for it.
Exactly. Whereas in SpaceX's case, it was more of a market-driven thing and really pushing for the mission. So I guess in either case, to tie it back to this book, I always wanted to read something that's that details more the history of SpaceX.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, I think it was also mentioned in the biography, but like Elon went to Russia to try to buy intercontinental missiles for his Mars Oasis project before he started SpaceX and stuff like that. But I never really looked into or learned about how the company was built kind of over the longer term, over the last decade or so.
Yeah.
So I found this really interesting and decided to buy it.
Okay. What's number three?
And number three is a book that I picked up. I put it back and then I picked it up again. It's on another one of my favorite subjects, and that's personal finance. And it's called Happy Money. It's written by some Japanese self-help guy.
Mm-hmm. Is it a Japanese book or an English book?
It's in English. I have no idea if it was written in Japanese originally. I assume so, but it's the English version at the very least. But yeah, I thought it sounded interesting because, again, I think I didn't read Ramit Sethi's book, but I kind of know his thinking, and I know the thinking of like Dave Ramsey and a bunch of other American people talking a lot about personal finance.
Yeah,
but I never really looked at it from the Japanese side, and I guess it's half Japanese, and also we're living here in Japan, so it's good to kind of get a different perspective on the same topic. Because again, it's really easy to become this sort of echo chamber, right? It's like you learn about something and then you consider it true.
Yeah.
And maybe it's true, but maybe there's also other true thing that is equally valid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because like I was talking about the book Thinking in Bets that I just finished reading the other day, and like she says, it's like nothing certain. Like you can be as certain as you want about something. There's very few things that are 100% certain.
Mm.
It's like even science, I bet like a lot of the things that we learned in elementary or maybe not elementary, maybe like middle school and high school or whatever. I'm sure there's a lot of things that have been changed since then because new evidence came up and things like that.
Well, I mean, like if you speak to an actual scientist, very few feel confident in giving you in speaking in absolutes and giving you facts as like that's 100% true. They all speak with a degree of confidence, you know. Anyone else that's trying to be like, you know, like this is the law and this is the way it is and you should listen to it, it's probably you know, blowing a lot of hot air.
Yeah, exactly. And and that book exactly talks about that kind of approach to life, almost like a scientific approach. It's like you're not when somebody disagrees with you, you're actually looking for a way to kind of increase your confidence interval or increase your level of confidence rather than kind of feeling offended that they disagree with you, which a lot of people do, right? And I do sometimes too, and I'm sure you do, and everybody does it because I think it's just the human nature.
Yeah.
And I did it. I said everybody does it, which I shouldn't. Statement of certainty where there shouldn't be certainty. But yeah, that was an interesting book. But and anyways, back to the Happy Money book. Yeah, I just thought it would be nice to kind of get a different perspective on personal finance and on how people think about money. And
I think your approach on reading books, just so that like I don't feel guilty about this stack of books that I'm taking forever to go through. And you know, I'm half the kind of person that wants to like gum on through it. Like gum on is that Japanese word of like persevere and patience and deal with it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, if you're not going to take action on this, if you don't honestly enjoy this, then like there's probably a better way to use your time. So it's like I feel guilty for like. But yeah, like I know before you respond, like that's why I'm considering your approach a little more nowadays because
But what is the guilt about? Because
I don't know. I like to see things through. I like to see things as a challenge that I want to get through. And if I see like if I stop or if I let it go, like I know there's many ways of thinking about this. But yeah. If I let it go, then it's like who's to say I'm gonna complete the next thing or the other thing. It kind of gives me that sense of confidence, like. I've gone through X, Y, and Z means I can easily go through A, B, and C or whatever. Like consistency type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was kind of the case with me too. Is like I like checking things off.
Yeah.
But again, there's nothing that says that if you finish a book, it's going to move you forward.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of the thing is like you just got to zoom out and actually look at the book as part of your life as a bigger thing. And then the book has two purposes, right? It either entertains you, which is great. You have fun.
Yeah,
or it informs you, it educates you. But for it to educate you, you actually need to be interested in it and actually enjoy reading it. Because if you don't, then you're not going to remember anything, anyways.
Yeah, AK has to be relevant.
Yeah, exactly. Or and if it's not relevant, then it means it's entertaining, and it can still be educational, but maybe not like applicable right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, the point being is like, if I don't finish a book, it's fine. It doesn't move me forward, but it also doesn't hold me back.
Mm.
And I feel like as long as I'm making progress on kind of the more general level.
Yeah, in the macro scale.
Exactly.
Because the micro thing, but it's like where you are in terms of your knowledge and capability and, I don't know, goals, probably the bigger picture than just like finishing off a book.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, what? The book's like, what, $15, $20? I think like $30 in this overpriced bookstore that we like going to.
Well, technically the Japanese Amazon probably sells it for $30 as well.
Yeah, I always check it. And the Amazon tends to have it at least a few dollars cheaper, but then I'm like, whatever.
Shipping and whatnot, and
it takes forever to get here.
And you travel to the store.
Yeah, but and I just find it more enjoyable to actually walk around the bookstore and like
agreed
pick up 100 books. And again, sound like nerd here, but
no, I guess
I'm a nerd. But
I used to do this like back in when I lived like on the Shinjuku side of Tokyo. I went to Kinokuniya, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Seventh or eighth floor was English books.
Yeah, exactly. This is where I used to go until you told me about this place.
And yeah.
Even though Shinjuku is closer to my place, actually, I always end up going there nowadays because it's just amazing. You can spend. I could literally spend morning to night there.
Yeah, you could just like go through all the books. You're like, what do I want? What do I want? I like this one, but also like that one. I remember there's a book on bugs. I was like, I don't know. Like bugs sound pretty fascinating.
No, this is the thing. Is like. because the other thing is, like, before I would only go into like the business book section.
Yeah.
And I'd kind of box myself in as like business. But now I just walk around the entire bookstore and like I find this thing about the electricity, about the grid, and just look at the biology section. I was looking at what was it? The medicine section or something. There was a book called I think the name was How Doctors Think or something like that.
And that's interesting.
That's pretty interesting, and I'm gonna buy that one. So yeah, I think books are fascinating because again, they just give you the chance to learn about something that you otherwise couldn't, which is also why I really enjoy like day in the life of type of videos and of different
professions. By the way, you have a YouTube channel that's popping off right now. You published a new video yesterday, right?
Yeah. I think I mentioned it here on the podcast
last week,
a couple weeks back or last week. Yeah. I guess it's a project that I started after being grounded for over a year now and not being able to do any travel and stuff like that. So just looking for different things to do. And as I said, I have no kind of a agenda for it, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. If I get followers over time, subscribers, whatever it's called on you, that's great. But I think it's more about, I think just like this podcast, I just realized that I enjoy talking about these things.
Yeah.
And it's like, why not just have another avenue of talking about things? And also what I realized actually, and I think this podcast is probably pretty responsible for it, is that more than writing about these things, I actually enjoy talking about them.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of tried doing YouTube rather than trying to put more effort into my personal blog or something.
Do you have a schedule that you can stick to? Like once
a week? I'm going to try every Saturday. I try to record on like Wednesday afternoon or Thursday morning or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then just spend a couple of days editing it because editing videos takes a lot of effort, I realized.
Yeah. And then you promote it, right?
Because it held me accountable, I posted it on my Facebook today.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the nice thing about YouTube is that it's a search engine and hopefully over time, just like with websites, you can gain traction there.
Yeah.
Because you were thinking of doing some comedy sketches or something, right?
That one, because like I was planning on doing it with friends, but then Corona happened and the podcast happened. And, you know, before that, like the friend that I was doing it with, I don't think he was or wanted to put that specific video that we did first. I think that kind of grounded the project. Oh, and at the same time, it's like, so I started doing more of my own. And while like trying to record, like I kept running into the issue of audio. I ran through multiple clip-on mics that I ordered from Amazon. So like obviously audio has to be really, like you can record a potato quality video, but the audio has to be on point.
Yeah.
So I had issues over there. And so like it, kind of these little things that technically should be bumps in the road kind of grounded me. And then there's the whole issue of like you're putting out stuff and then like when you're doing it with someone else, you know,
yeah,
it's easy to put it out and be like, all right, because you both of you kind of like the fact is there's two people that kind of like softens the blow as opposed to if you're doing it by yourself. And because I've never done it before, it's like it would have been easier to do it with a friend. But in your case, I think you did a YouTube video or YouTube channel before this, so you have some experience of just like throwing stuff out and be like whatever. In my case, like I've not done that, even though I've been like on bigger channels. So I kind of like sidelined it. It was, I wrote scripts and then nothing really happened with those scripts. Then there was also like getting a camera and like filming myself, you know, like trying to get all the proper angles and stuff. Like, cause you know, filming a script is like, obviously part of it is acting. Part of it is directing. Part of it is like, storyboarding how the script is going to play out. So it's like, I mean, all of this stuff is doable, but long story short is I ran into little things that just piled up on a list of excuses and sidelined it. And then we started doing the podcast. So I was like, all right, let me divert my energy into this one.
Nice. Yeah, I think it's nice to have an outlet where you just talk and share some of your thoughts and some of your ideas. And I just thought, I guess over the last few years, I've done a bunch of interesting things that I think other people might find interesting. And why not create something? In the worst case, I'll at least have something to look back at like when I'm 70.
Yeah.
Or something.
Look at this comment that I got on my video. Exactly. I mean, the really nice thing is like getting positive feedback, but also like getting negative feedback on YouTube videos like sucks so hard, especially if you're starting out. Because like I did like videos on bigger channels in the past.
Yeah.
And you know, every now and then you get some like douchebag that just like leaves a comment and just like, oh, like of all the good comments out there, you're just like focusing on this one. It really drives you nuts. So that would be a challenge for me. Like that's the thing. Like part of me never wants to be famous because I don't know, like, if I can turn myself off, or maybe it comes with experience. Eventually you're just like, whatever.
I think one for anybody that's even remotely famous, they just got to have a thick skin because people are going to write mean comments.
Yeah.
And I think two, some people actually take that, to use like a really self-help sounding word, take that negative energy and convert it into positive energy to fuel. So, yeah. And again, I think it's like, just focus on that one comment. That's nice. Also, like, I don't know about your blog, but I had some, nothing like really mean or anything, but I had some comments that were not necessarily positive on my blog post and stuff like that. But then I see the comments that are really nice and that are like, oh, thanks, this is really a good article, or this really helped me, or and stuff like that. And you actually, that's when you actually realize how powerful even a simple blog post can be. It's like, it literally can help somebody on the other side of the screen.
Well, the thing is, like, I think it's a human tendency because we're wired more so for danger, so like, or bad news. So that gets amplified a lot more in our brain. So obviously you kind of have to rewire yourself a little bit or force yourself to look at it from the positive perspective. But that's why, like, bad news travels faster than good news.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like people being afraid of getting on the plane just because they heard of a plane crash once and stuff like that. I think it's very similar. We just tend to exaggerate the bad and underestimate the good.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't, like, I don't know. I don't quite have the drive just yet to, like, pump out YouTube content. Maybe I'll change my mind about it. This is actually the good thing about talking about this stuff. I'm saying maybe I'll change my mind because, like, maybe I will, you know. Maybe like a month or two months down the line. Like, by the way, I uploaded a video yesterday. Go check it out.
Now it's on record that you're going to consider changing your mind.
But it's like, that's why it's good to, like, talk about these things, because you're like, eventually I'll come back and I'll listen to this and be like, that didn't sound right. Or maybe I will try and do something like that.
Exactly. And like we were talking about the benefits of this podcast or the things that it helped us with, or that we learned, I think, a couple episodes back in the 1 year anniversary episode.
Yeah.
By the way, this is the 50th episode, which is a nice milestone too, I guess. Although we can't brag about it too much because we bragged about the 1 year anniversary.
That topic has been already used up. We'll have to use it up again next year.
Yeah, exactly. That part of our ammunition is reloading right now. But the nice part is, like, I really feel there's a sort of accountability when we talk about these things for me to actually act on them. Like when we were chatting about the fact that I should probably share the video on my Facebook, right?
Yeah.
And as you know, I'm really bad at sharing stuff on Facebook, and whether it's this podcast or anything else.
Why? Well, out of curiosity, why?
I don't know. I used to share a lot of stuff, but I think I don't know. I think I just got bored of the platform. It's like,
okay,
like maybe when I was younger, I would just share stuff, but now I was like, all right, I'm enjoying my stuff. I don't really even care if anybody knows that I'm enjoying my stuff. And
yeah, I understand that.
And like, I just don't. I don't know. For some reason, it doesn't even like hit my head that I should maybe share this or whatever.
Okay. Because like, from the marketing side of things, it's not about the whole here, take a look at my life. I'm posting this. Take a look at my pictures of my baby or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, from the case of like, what's your marketing plan for the YouTube channel? Like, how are you going to promote it? How are you going to grow your user base? I think that would be like the easy step. Like, one, post it on your Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to get back to that point, like, because you said I should probably share it, and I was like, all right, if I don't share it, call me out on this channel today.
Yeah.
As we're recording this, actually shared it and got a couple of comments, got a new subscriber, so I think net positive.
Yeah, I think I might have been the one who left the comment.
So I got two comments, including yours.
Okay.
So, but again, I guess part of it is also to go back to what you were saying. I feel like there's a to kind of go back to the point, I also feel like there's a bigger hurdle sharing something you create with the people that you know than
you don't know. Okay, I see. Like, it's easier to share it with strangers because you don't care about them.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know if there's a real thing, but to an extent it feels like
that. Well, I think there is some truth to it. Like, I wouldn't post half of the stuff that I write, or 99% of the stuff that I write to my own Facebook unless I'm trying to grow an audience. Like, in the case of my some of my affiliate sites, obviously my friends are not like a target audience, and it would be like getting my mom to read it. It's like, well, actually my mom would love it simply because she, you know, every mother is invested and she wants her child.
Yeah, exactly. Great.
But like, your friends, and like, they don't really care. It's like, imagine, you know, it's like blogging about personal finance and posting it. Like, maybe one of your friends will support it on the day you started. Remember, like, when we first started the podcast, it's funny, like, that like post, like, hey, everyone, we just started the podcast. It just gets a great reception. Like, yeah, do it. I will listen. And then like you check your stats and no one really listens and no one really cares. So it's kind of like that. Like that's, so I don't post it because it's like they're not the audience, not exactly who's going to help me. And I don't really expect them to do so because it's just like, you know, it's like the target market type of approach.
Yeah.
So I guess also that kind of makes sense as to why you wouldn't, but like in, you wouldn't post it, but like in the first few days, I think probably makes some sense just to post it, just to make everyone aware. Maybe there is someone. It's like one of these easy low hanging fruit things that you can do to start growing an audience.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think there's also a part of like, oh, people are going to think, oh, you're starting a YouTube channel or you're starting a podcast or whatever. And it's like, but then I was reading something from Ali Abdallah or watching, I think his like a video on how to start a YouTube channel. There's like a few tips and I found some of them useful. They were all pretty basic stuff. But one thing he said was like, if you're afraid to start something or to put it out there just because you're afraid how people will react to it, then you shouldn't worry about that because those people that don't care won't care.
Yeah.
And those that care, they will either enjoy the content or find it helpful. So like there's really no bad outcome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's like you kind of think like, how are people going to react? But I think for the overwhelming majority, no one's really going to care. Then you might get a troll or two, and then you might have like a few people that found it useful.
So maybe we on the second anniversary goal setting, a mega goal setting episode in a year, to set a goal for you to start a YouTube channel with your sketches.
Maybe, but like I'm kind of thinking like, what would I want to do? Because the whole point of those sketches was like more so like, from the marketing side of things, I read a lot of ad scripts for products and whatnot. And like, obviously, while I'm sitting in my mind, I'm just thinking of these stupid, crazy products and services that shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
And that's where like ideas come from. You could have like a whole channel around that. But like, yeah, I don't want to talk about it like otherwise I'll, I don't know. Maybe we'll start it next year. Who knows? I do have a camera, but it's like a simple digital camera that I bought off of Amazon like around a year ago or a little more than a year ago when I wanted to start it.
Well, you know what all the YouTubers with $20,000 cameras say when they suggest somebody start a YouTube channel. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, the camera doesn't matter.
No, but that's true. Like, I think you can shoot with iPhone. You can shoot with, like, pretty much everybody has a camera to start a YouTube channel with nowadays, which I find really fascinating. It's so easy to get stuff out there.
Yeah.
And as cliche as it sounds, it's really only you that's standing between you and actually putting something out there.
Yeah.
Between not putting something out there and putting something.
Well, once YouTube reaches my, if it reaches like, you know, my to-do list, then I'll jump right into it.
Yeah.
Knowing that you've already also made your first step. I can do it too.
Exactly. And again, I don't know if I'll stick with it or not. The aim is to stick with it. And so far I'm enjoying it. And I think over the last couple of videos, I got more efficient with editing, which was also the case with this podcast. Like, in the beginning, it was just stressful because takes forever, and then you learn a couple of tricks, couple of keyboard shortcuts, and it suddenly becomes much faster.
Yeah.
So there's a learning curve there, but yeah, so far enjoying it. And again, one of the parts that I'm also enjoying is that I'm just getting to learn something completely new. I'm just getting to learn like how to make these videos, how to outline them. Like when I was recording the first one, I kind of had I tried doing like reading off the screen.
Yeah.
Which I didn't like, and I didn't publish that video.
Yeah,
exactly. Which I didn't like, and I didn't publish the video in the end. I'll re-record it.
Yeah. How did you do it this time around?
So the second time, I was still looking at the screen a lot, but I tried not to as much, and I tried to look into the camera every now and then as well.
Do you have a script or an outline?
The second one was kind of somewhere in between a script and an outline, so it wasn't like a word-for-word script.
Okay.
But it was also a pretty beefy outline. Okay. Or it was too beefy to be called an outline. And the third one was more like more of an outline, I guess. And I just kind of, rather than trying to get it everything right, I just focused on getting a segment right and then kind of reading it and kind of getting it into my head. And then again, just looking at the camera and trying to explain that part and so on. So I think it worked better. But there's still so much to learn in terms of lighting. And I realized because I'm recording this behind my desk and I have like maybe 24 inches on screen here. Mm-hmm. And then the first video, there was like a corner of the screen blurry in the corner of the video I noticed because of the placement of camera.
Mm-hmm.
This time I avoided that and I was really careful. But then I had a light on a little tripod on my desk.
Mm-hmm.
And the light being my iPhone camera light.
Yeah.
And this time I just noticed there's like a really small part of the tripod visible at the bottom of the video. It's blurry.
Yeah, well, yeah, but like no one's going to notice a small tripod.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes you think like, oh, should I re-record this? But then like, whatever, let's just put it out there and let's get to the next one.
Yeah. Or you could crop out. I don't think, yeah, it's too big of a deal.
Yeah, and nobody cares, honestly. I don't think they cares. And you can't aim to have everything perfect.
Yeah. It sounds like you've made some progress despite, you know, like with our heavy goal month, which May is supposed to be.
I think I've made some progress, not necessarily sticking to the stuff that I outlined in the goals. It's good and bad, I guess. I guess shows my nature of just being of every now and then just chasing the new shiny object, which is YouTube in this case, I guess.
I think the YouTube is not new. You should be on TikTok, or even TikTok is old at this point. I don't know where you should be at this point.
Yeah, I'm so far behind those trends that when I talk about new shiny objects, I just mean personally to me, because honestly, I don't know what kids these days are using to promote things. Nope. I guess TikTok's still pretty popular. We'd have to ask Gary Vee. Maybe it's NFTs.
Yeah, I think NFTs, you have to come up with an NFT of your own and sell it.
Yeah, we should do an episode on that.
I have no idea about NFTs. Like, I'll have to read about it.
Me neither. But to me, it seems like I can understand it, for example, when it's like really one of a kind thing. Or whatever, but the way that people seem to be using it, and again, don't take my words for it, because I know very little about it. But from my from what I saw in terms of the NFT that Gary Vee started selling recently, the Vee Friends, to me, it just seems like it's each of the NFTs comes with something, right? So one NFT allows you to go to the conference, one NFT allows you to meet Gary Vee and play ping pong with him or whatever.
Yeah.
And to me, it just seems like the NFT is just like something they package together. And a lot of people are probably just buying it for the thing that the NFT comes with rather than for the NFT itself.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? But if that's the case, then all that's doing is that there's artificial demand for this thing that nobody really wants.
Yeah.
And everybody just wants the little perk that comes with it.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
And then there's that note, right? Gary Vee gets 10% of every resale every time the NFT is traded.
It sounds like it was just like a, let's jump in on this hype train and see if we can make money off of it.
Exactly. And
something useful.
Yeah. And what I don't get, again, I didn't study this too much, so I can't speak with any sort of certainty or anything. But what I don't get is like, you buy this and then Gary Vee gets 10% of every trade that thing makes.
Sounds
right?
Like a really good move for Gary.
sounds like a good move for Gary. And it also sounds like the moment, it's like buying a new car. It's like the moment you buy the NFT, you lose 10% of its value, because if you want to resell it right now at the same price, you got to pay Gary 10%. I guess the demand is, again, in the fact that somebody wants to attend the conference or somebody wants to attend the ping pong game with Gary or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I still don't get how that is different from selling a ticket to an event and then verifying it with your ID. Like you get to the event and you show them your, I don't know, passport or driver's license or whatever.
Maybe the difference is in this is like probably less so for the user and more so for the seller, where Gary just continues to earn off of it in the case that someone buys it from the original buyer, which also makes me wonder, like, how many people are going to be in the market for that specifically? Will Gary be forever around to run these conferences with these people?
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, all right, it's supposed to be decentralized, but it sounds to me like it's pretty much centralized around Gary Vee being able to hold on to his work forever.
Yeah.
Which again, I don't understand, because on one hand, people say it's a way to sell something that's unique. Mm-hmm. In a digital form, right? It's like you kind of create scarcity out of abundance and out of an unlimited resource, essentially. But at the same time, it just doesn't sound like that to me, because the only scarcity there is that Gary gets to, or whoever gets to, keep their royalty, but that thing keeps circulating out. So I don't understand.
Yeah, that's something I haven't thought about much, and I can't grasp my mind around it. I feel like there are cases in which it would make sense. Like, I don't know, as like you said, a ticket for an event maybe makes sense as an NFT because it's like a unique type of thing and you want to, but that's all it should kind of be, not like a whole kind of token that's resellable. Because like, you know, you, for example, you attend the concert or some sort of event, you buy a ticket. It's like, if that thing is going to happen again, like, do you get free entrance again? They're not going to make money off of that. You know, if you have like, essentially, let's say that concert happens like once a year, they're not going to make money if you buy a yearly pass. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll find another way to monetize it, but I don't see it as like a big solution to them, because it's like people will attend it regardless and pay for it. I don't know if I'm making sense here right now, but it's, yeah, that's the thing that I can't kind of grasp my mind around.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, to me, it just sounds like hype. And again, you see these people writing, oh, you don't believe in Dogecoin or in Bitcoin or in NFTs or whatever. You're kind of missing out on the future.
Well, that's they're making a logical fallacy over there, because they're using a straw man argument. They're turning your argument around into something else, which is not the case. It's like the technology behind it is interesting. It probably is the future, but that doesn't mean its current application right now it's useful.
Exactly. Like I feel like there's a strong connection. I think I don't know if it was CoffeeZilla or whoever made a video that kind of showed that analogy, but like to the dot-com bubble.
Yeah.
Is like it feels like everybody is now buying everything with crypto in the name, essentially, yeah. Or with NFT in the name.
They're buying it for the hype. If that's the only reason or inspiration to like buy it and hope it goes up, then clearly you're buying it on emotional reasons and hope rather than something as a sound investment. I mean, like again, like it's if you want to play around with your money, it's fine. Like we all have things that we spend money on, but it can't be like a life investment or something that's going to change your life around.
Yeah, and that's where I kind of struggle wrapping my head around this, because clearly whoever bought Bitcoin or even Dogecoin or one of these like ridiculously sounding cryptocurrencies, yeah, made a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
Like, good for him. And they clearly made a good outcome. And again, it's coming back to the Thinking in Bits book, is the outcome is not a reflection of the decision, right?
Yeah.
It's like you might make a bad decision, yet you might still get a good outcome. It's like there might be a drunk driver that decides to drive home and gets home safely.
Yeah, and you'll be like, thank God, that was a good decision of me.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it was a good decision. It was a stupid decision, exactly. That where he was lucky with the outcome, essentially.
Exactly.
And I feel like a lot of these people, they just talk about crypto and all of these latest things. I'm sure there's a lot of them that genuinely understand it and that genuinely believe in it, which is good. But I think there's also a lot of people that just happen to buy it for $1,000 and now it's worth $40,000. And suddenly they think they've made the best decision because of the outcome. And I think the outcome is clearly good, and congratulations. But again, I think the question is, how repeatable is this? And whoever gets in now, maybe they still get out good. Whoever gets in later, who knows, right?
Yeah, it's also survivor bias, right? Survivorship bias.
Yeah, that too. Exactly.
Of all the people that bought and invested, obviously the early few made a lot of money. But like, what's the case with everyone else right now?
I would bet some money on the fact that there's probably a decent portion of people that just thought they would buy Bitcoin today and a year later they're a millionaire or something.
Yeah.
Right. Judging from all the ads that you can see on the internet and all the YouTube videos.
What's the price right now? So I see $36,000 for one Bitcoin.
There's a lot of people that are just convinced that it's gonna, as Elon says, go to the moon. Mm-hmm. And they just keep holding it. And that's where it becomes irrational, right? It's like you make a bet, you go to casino, you bet $1 million on I don't know, number 16, and yeah, you 30x your money. And you suddenly believe that, oh, that was the best decision. So you bet on 16 again. It's like, no, just take your money. At least take something off the table and then gamble with the rest, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have much thoughts on this one. Like, I would buy a few just to, like, see the process. But I don't know. It's I'm looking through, like, the Reddit threads right now. This is, like, a really hot topic.
Yeah.
If you want to check out the show notes for this episode, check out sidehustlesandstuff.com/E50. E50 stands for episode 50. This was our 50th episode. So check it out. Check out the show notes. If you want to start your own side hustle, again, visit the show notes. Check out Bluehost. It's a place where you can buy your own .com, your own website, and put your project out into the world. Finally, make it real. A website makes it real. So visit sidehustlesandstuff.com/E50. And this has been the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast with Keishi and Yuri.
Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.